by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
All right, we are back. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors, always available on demand 24/7 at the radio station's app. Just click on demand. You can listen to any show that we've had in the past couple of years. Janet Millick and Justin Benfett with us. And you guys, we've got a really important time upon us as we have those statewide meetings that are open to the public. And this is where the public can really step up and let their feelings be known about what they think or what they've seen over the last year.
That's right, Drew. We talk a lot about the importance of the public in our season setting process. We have the harvest surveys that are important, that kind of in the fall and early part of the year, you can tell us how you did. We look at that. You have the opportunity to converse with us individually at any time. And most importantly, coming up here throughout March, depending on where you live, kind of mid-March to end of March, we're going to have a ton of our public meetings where we talk about what we're proposing for seasons. That includes season dates, that includes number of licenses that are issued. And it's really important for us that we have the public there to tell us what they're seeing on the ground and what they're thinking is going on, and to hear what we're seeing on the ground and what we think is going on.
What are some of the things that will be discussed at these meetings? Are they just an open format where anyone and everyone can come in and talk whatever they want as far as it's the wildlife? Or is it more of a, here's what we're talking about, we want to know your thoughts on that?
Well, of course, Drew, it is different at every meeting because somebody different runs every meeting. You're going to be talking to your local biologist, your local game wardens, in addition to other members of the region. And so it's going to be different no matter where you go. But hey, we're here for all of it. So, if you don't learn what you want to learn or don't hear what you need to hear, raise your hand and let us know. And Justin can talk a little bit about our Casper meetings and what we'll be doing here. But it's pretty neat and a lot of great opportunity for conversation.
Yeah, Drew. So like our public meetings have really evolved over time. So when I started 20 years ago doing this, public meetings used to be a much bigger deal. We used to have much higher turnout, and that's the way local folks knew how to come get their information. Over time, it seemed like public attendance has waned, and we've tried to evolve how we present our information in this digital age to the public. And then things really changed when COVID hit, and we were told we couldn't have public meetings and that sort of thing back in 2020. So the way it kind of goes is, like Janet said, it just depends. So in Casper, we tend to present like a little bit more of a formal presentation, talk through things. But, you get over to Lusk, where it's kind of more of a informal gathering and just talk through things, and it's everything in between. But in addition to that, we now also present some online presentations for each biologist district. So for example, in our Casper region, we've got a Casper biologist, a Douglas one, and a Newcastle biologist. And so each of those three will have a presentation that covers deer, elk, antelope, grouse, turkeys, rabbits, you name it. For their little part of the world, and they actually narrate those presentations and kind of talk through some things, and then we post that online, and folks can then listen to them as they please, and they can also provide us formal comments through our website.
What information is actually used when it comes to the season setting meetings in mid-April?
Well, of course, there's a whole ton of information that we're utilizing, information like we've talked in the past that we're collecting throughout the year, that actually ultimately results in what our recommendations are. But if you're talking, through these public meetings and the public input that we get, it just really depends. So, obviously we wouldn't have public meetings and a public input process if we didn't listen to those comments and try to adhere to those comments and make changes based on those accordingly. But it just really depends. These comments can really run the gamut from, hey, I just want to change an opening day because that's when I don't have to work on a Tuesday or something like that, or all the way to sometimes, you know, we'll propose things where we get a bunch of folks that galvanize in either support or opposition to what we're proposing. And we do try to accommodate public input to the extent possible. It's certainly fair to say that we can't make changes based on everything, but at the end of the day, we're managing the public's wildlife, and so public input is pretty important to us.
We're rapidly approaching these meetings, and winter has kind of been rough, and there's still more winter to come, but how much information will you be able to share with the public about the condition of the wildlife at this point?
This is something that we watch all year long, you know, starting in October sometimes when the snow starts to fly. We, you know, hope that the animals are going into the winter with being in good condition, good body fat, you know, good habitat, good forage. And we just continue to watch. And as we all know, this has been a heck of a winter. There's been little areas where animals have been able to hide out and find feed and do good. We have just not stopped with the blizzards. And so we're getting to a point where we're looking at some pretty serious winter conditions for those animals. And we're giving an update at the March meeting to the commission so that they know kind of what everyone is seeing on the ground. And come April, we might know a little bit more, but it's going to be a long term all year by the time we hit May.
Justin, when we talked to you earlier this year, you said that you'd been monitoring like you always do. And at that point, things were looking good, but things have kind of changed.
Yeah, it really has. So, and that was actually back kind of earlier in January. So it's been a while now. And so it's one of those things, like winter was off to kind of a moderate start. We had some snow that stuck around. And when we talked, it was like, yeah, we'll see. But as with all things in Wyoming, typically we don't, if we're going to experience heavy winter losses in our wildlife, we don't start to see those till mid to late February and into March. And that's because those animals have endured the bulk of the winter by then. And that's when they're at their weakest, just, you know, body health condition wise and that sort of thing. And then these later season storms can really push things over. And that's exactly what we're into now. I mean, since we last spoke, we've had multiple large snowstorms and some pretty frigid temperatures, and with just a little bit of moderate warm up in between that can melt a little bit of that top layer of snow and then freeze again and cause ice crusting and really, you know, difficult conditions for an animal to walk through and dig through and ultimately get some forage. So things have been shaped up to be really tough in several parts of the state.
What is your cutoff for information collecting before you give it to the commission? Will it be that last day before, like the 16th of April?
Well, like Janet said, we're certainly watching it. We're watching it all the time. And so there's a couple things that we'll be doing. So we're going to err on the side of caution with most of our season recommendations. So there's already a lot of parts of the region where we've frankly been in the mode of reducing licenses over the last 4 or 5 years as our deer and antelope populations have kind of struggled over that time frame. But there are some cases, we've got a few places, like let's just say south of Casper, where antelope have done really well. Our plans were to increase licenses quite a bit this year. But now with kind of where we're at with the winter, we'll probably be pulling back on some of that. In other cases, we're already planning to cut, but we'll continue to watch that through the season setting process. We can make changes all the way up until our April commission meeting. And so by then we'll have a really good handle. There's also a couple other things that we'll do to monitor this. So there may be some places where we actually put an airplane up in the air and look for just try to see if we can gauge just the extent to which we're losing some antelope out in some of the sagebrush country. And then the other tool that we have in our belt now that we didn't used to is we have more collared animals around the state now than we've ever had before. So that's from a bunch of different research projects like migration corridor stuff, you name it, wind energy projects. But we also have this new mule deer monitoring package that our commission passed. So we've got a bunch of collars and several deer herds around the state where we're trying to just better understand, you know, their survival and how they fare throughout the course of the year. And so with all this, it's, you know, one of the things that we're learning in parts of the state with all these collared animals is we've lost quite a few collared animals and depending on where you're at just in the last couple of weeks.
Do you see that the collared animals will increase now that we've seen great information off of the higher numbers that we already have, or will they stay the same?
Well, with the mule deer, the new monitoring package, I mean, we're going to continue to do that in parts of the state for the next 5 years pretty intensively. But in other parts of the state, it just kind of depends on what the localized research needs are. But it's fair to say we have more research going on than at any time in our agency's history. So I would say we're going to have quite a few collared animals for years to come.
The information that you have collected is way better than you've ever had in the past too. And that obviously helps with, you know, the future of hunting in Wyoming.
Yeah, it's really remarkable now what we're learning. I mean, let's just take south of Casper, for example. We had kind of a whole bunch of antelope collared in Shirley Basin as part of a wind project, and then also up further north, a migration project. And so we're learning there, those animals tend to kind of winter in two discrete areas. Like there's a whole bunch of them that will go south into the west over towards Rawlins and Seminole Reservoir, and then a bunch move north and winter just south of Casper in the area we call Bates Hole, you know, kind of by that rest area on Highway 47 between there and Alcova and to the north there down in that lower country. Well, just in the last couple of weeks, we've actually lost several animals in that Rawlins country. We haven't lost any in our Bates Hole portion of it. You know, that could inform how we manage antelope in Hunt Area 32 versus like 47 and 48. And so that's just a little snippet of how this can inform what we're doing.
Which obviously the meeting's coming up March 20th through 23rd. Go to wgft.wild.gov to make sure you know where the meeting is going to be in your region and to find out all the information. Thanks, Janet and Justin. Brian from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports is up next.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And Brian, you know, we've had a snap of warm weather and people are getting really antsy to get out on their boat and fish, but there's still ice, so you really can't do that unless you ice fish.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that are hitting the hard water still. And, you know, with the nicer weather, the ice conditions are still pretty good. Guys are getting out there and just enjoying the time.
Now, when people go out to check the ice, you know, you want to make sure you have solid ice, at least 4 inches to walk on, and Godzilla at 100 inches. We've covered that a lot over the last couple of months. But, you know, making sure you have all the equipment that you need, and you guys still have a full supply of ice fishing stuff.
Yeah, we do. It's been picked through pretty good this season, but there's still plenty enough to get a guy out, especially if you've never fished before on the ice. I mean, there's all the basic stuff to get you on the water and, you know, enjoy that nice weather because, you know, it's not going to last forever. And when we have these nice days, we had a full moon this last week. So we had some guys that were really focusing on going out late in the evenings to try to hit that full moon bite. So it's been kind of interesting to listen to people, but we got some great opportunities still ahead of us.
Now, we have had a really interesting winter so far, with spring lurking in just a couple of weeks, but really cold, then mild, then lots of snow, and really cold again. Is this going to affect the way that you're fishing or maybe what you're fishing?
It's just going to affect when we can get on the water. I mean, especially on the big water in terms of getting the big boats out. But there's a lot of people that are just, you know, hitting the rivers, the tailwaters off of Gray Reef or, you know, some of these other tributaries where there's still a lot of action. I mean, there's fish are hungry and the North Platte River coming out of Gray Reef. It's going to start getting really busy with fly fishermen here because when they start getting some nice days, we're going to start seeing, you know, 20, 30, 40 boats on the water.
Which, of course, that if you're looking for an outdoor experience, you can always go up on the mountain. There's lots of snow there. I know we multiple feet of snow, so snowshoeing and cross-country skiing and kind of just getting out and enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, we've got kind of the best of both worlds. You know, we've got the good snow conditions and we've got good ice conditions. And now we couple that with some nice 40, 50-degree days. Obviously be safe on the hard water, but you know, it's a great opportunity to get out there and go snowshoeing or just do some trail riding, that kind of stuff.
Well, with small game still around the area, there's rabbit hunting and some of that, that if you are wanting to get your kids out and get involved with the weather kind of in a good stage right now, maybe a new 22 or, you know, a small 410 or something like that would be a good idea.
Well, it sounds like the best way to spend some tax money, right? You get that tax return and, you know, maybe go splurge a little bit on the kids and go get them outside and teach them how to properly handle a firearm and some of the safety stuff that goes behind that. But yeah, we've got a huge selection of 22s and some of that rimfire, not only the firearms, but the ammo has really become available pretty well.
And one thing that has become popular over the last few years are the air rifles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good pellet gun is a great way to teach your kid a little of the safety skills that they need to go.
Yeah, that and, you know, a lot of these schools are actually having some archery programs. So, you know, just when the weather starts getting nice, the kids have been tied up inside, you know, a lot of the winter, you know, to just pick up a kid's bow and get them outside and shooting at some targets and let them see what dad and mom do.
Now, obviously, when you come out here to Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, everyone here is knowledgeable enough to help you out in whatever it is you're looking for. And I know that a lot of people are a little itching. And I was out here the other day and I saw some guys that were sighting in bows and just kind of back in the archery range just to kind of give themselves a little extra practice.
Yeah, you know, we work with Lost Arrows here in Casper, and they've got a really nice group of guys that do a lot of like competitive, you know, 3D shoots and some and a paper league on Thursday nights, I believe. So that's been kind of fun. But they've also we've also got the new Hoyt and Matthews releases. So those bows just got announced. We've got those bows in stock. And so we're starting to see guys, you know, whether it's tax return money or just that it was time for them to upgrade their bow, are coming in and getting those bows set up, using our 20-yard range and getting some good practice in.
Which, obviously, you get a new bow, you need to get it set up right, and you need to make sure it's perfect for you. And that isn't going to be good for you to go out and buy the bow and then go hunting that day. And to have a summer full of practice time is great lead time.
Yeah, you know, Casper Mountain, there's the archery club supports a archery range up there with a bunch of 3D targets. It's a phenomenal range, not very accessible right now, but you know, get the new bow set up. Maybe you're looking at doing a new sight this year and upgrading your old bow, but get it all sighted in, and then once that weather breaks and you can get up the mountain and access the archery range, that range up there is awesome. So
it's a great opportunity for you to come in, and like Brian said, that tax money's burning a hole in your pocket. Why not spend it right here, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports?
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian Woodward back. And Brian, this is kind of a bittersweet time of year because we're about out of almost every hunting season. Except for some bird hunting right now.
Yeah, there's still the bird farm outside of town here, River Bend Roosters. They think they're open until the 31st of the month. Starting April 1st in a lot of areas, we're going to start seeing some turkey hunting seasons open.
A good pheasant hunt is a good way to get the cardio going, because if you've been sitting all winter, why not get up and right. Go see Bob and walk around a little bit?
Well, it's sure a good time for the dogs, you know, and it's fun. Nothing funner than to just sit there and watch the dogs work and watch them put their nose to the ground and chase up a bird and it's a great time.
Now, you actually have a young pup dog that you're training to be a bird dog.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a little experience with him a couple of weeks ago. And how did that go? I mean, because he's really fresh.
Yeah, he's 9 months, and I've got a 9-year-old also. So my 9-year-old gets preferential treatment because I can't leave the house without him tearing it apart if I take another
right.
dog. So it's like an angry girlfriend. So anyways, the puppy, we took him out with a group of guys last Sunday and really did pretty good. He was, you know, kind of not 100% sure what to do. And mm-hmm. I just kind of let him run around and do his thing. And by the end of the day, he was reacting and responding to gunshots and actually following downed birds. He did a great job retrieving them, was wanting to play tug of war with the other dogs at times, which is not good. But for his first trip out, I see a lot of really good promise, and I'm going to take him out there to Bob's here in the next month and let Bob work with them for a couple months. And hopefully by the season starts in the fall, we'll be ready again.
When you have a dog like that, I mean, obviously Jaeger's been around other dogs, but like Gunfire, did that really for the first, you know, little bit really screw with him?
Not really, because, you know, I had taken him out. We've been, you know, sponsoring the HD Outdoors the first Wednesday or first Friday every month. They've been having a shooting event out at Riverbend Roosters. And so they've just been shooting clay targets off the back deck and five stand, that kind of stuff. And so I'd bring the pup with me, and really he gave no cares of whatsoever was going on with the shooting side of things. So I think just getting him exposed to being around some of those noises certainly helped. And he's got a lot of energy. He's not going to be afraid of gunfire by the time we're done.
And one of the best parts about going out to Bob's is, you know, you could get yourself some birds, or you can just do some shooting with the clays and take your dog and let it run out like that. Or, you know, Bob does a great job training and has trained a lot of the great bird dogs around here.
Yeah, he's got a great facility out there. I mean, he doesn't really do a lot of boarding. He does, you know, breed a few litters a year. Definitely not a puppy mill or anything like that. It's a great program that he's got out there. Dogs that I've seen that have come out of there have been really from good lines and do a great job. But he does do quite a bit of training, and so the summer months is kind of when he focuses on that. The other thing that's great during the summer months is he's got the three sporting clays courses set up. So I think you can, you know, purchase a card and you can kind of go almost 24/7 basically, where he's got electronic stands loaded up with clay targets and you can run the whole course. So there's going to be leagues that are going to be set up out there. You can just go out and just take the wife out and just go, you know, spend a couple hours of just, you know, like going to a movie, you know.
All right. So. More entertaining than a movie, really.
More entertaining and probably cheaper.
Yeah, in the long run, you're right. But one of the things that I really like about the fact that you can go out and shoot is some guys will not shoot a gun at a bird until duck season or goose season or pheasant season, but you get rusty and you gotta keep your muscle memory is shooting, and going out to Bob's and doing things like that is the perfect way to keep your mind tough until the season comes back.
Yeah, you know, and it's just great to be outdoors, right? I mean, that's you know, you pick your days. If, you know, a lot of times if the wind's blowing in Casper, it's calm out there. It's crazy. It's almost like it's in some kind of a valley. But those ranchers knew what they were doing when they put those homes in those areas, because a lot of times when it's crazy windy in Casper, you'll go out there and it'll be really pleasant. So you know, don't let the weather affect what you're going to be doing. But that's a great option for something to do. I mean, of course, you can always swing by Sloan's and grab your ice cream when you're done.
Oh yeah,
or maybe before.
That's right.
Know.
That's one of the top things. You know, you got to go out and do that. Now, we are talking pheasant hunting and shooting, but there's another bird season coming in here soon, and that's the turkey bird.
I haven't done much turkey hunting, and the times that I have gone, I've gone with somebody that kind of knew what they were doing, but I think there's plenty of resources, you know. I mean, we're selling shotguns already. I mean, a lot of guys coming in looking for single shot 20 gauges or 28 gauges or a lot of 410s, actually. We're rigging them up with some optics, you know, some reflex sights or red dot sights, and they're shooting that TSS shot. Talked to a couple guys here that are like, yeah, you know, I only spent $129 on this gun, but I spent $200 on the optics and then $5 or $6 a shot. He goes, but I'm, you know, when I killed my first turkey at 60 yards, my buddy said, holy cow, I need to get that set up.
Yeah. You know, that was when I was a kid, going out turkey hunting was one of the things we did as a family with my dad. And, you know, he always said turkeys have great eyes. And they can see just the smallest movement. I don't know if you've been on Wolcott or any of these areas here. These are wild turkeys, but they're kind of domesticated at this point. So it's not the same. You do have to, right, you know, be camoed up, and you have to be, you know, using your skills.
So we can't just drive our car into the field and sit there and wait for him to come peck at our car?
No, no, it's odd. It's weird. I mean, who knows? But you can't do that. But I think this year would be a great year for turkey hunting. And if you've never thought about it, you know, you don't have to, you know, apply. You don't have to send off. You can come in and get an over-the-counter license.
Yeah, it's something to definitely research a little bit on the Game and Fish website. Unfortunately, you know, they're not printing the brochures or pamphlets anymore. So all the research has to be done online. But those seasons are coming up, so you still got plenty of time to, you know, sight in a shotgun or figure out what you're going to do on that end of it and maybe look at some of the different walk-in areas that offers turkey hunting.
If you do go out and do some turkey hunting, we want to hear about it, and you can always hit us up in our app. Send us a message, and we'd love to interact with you here on the show.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. I am Drew. Thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, you can reach out to us if you have any questions, if you want to talk more about our guests, or you have a thought you want to bring up on the show, do it in the station's app. Just click the messages button. Now, a few weeks ago, I met a guy named Pete Mattson. Pete is with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, but there's more to Pete. And I found this out at a Thankful Thursday event in Casper. And Pete owns a llama pack company. It's Bighorn Pack Llamas. You can go to their website, bighornpackllamas.com, to find out a little more. And Pete, how are things going?
Pretty good. A lot better in the last few weeks. So, yeah, happy spring is coming.
Yeah, you know, when we last talked, you had just been getting over COVID. How are you feeling now?
Much, much better. Yeah, that took me down for about a week, and it was not a great week to be down. But, yeah, back and 100% now.
Well, that's good to hear. And you got big plans for the spring and summer as far as getting out and enjoying nature?
Yeah, counting down to it, chomping at the bit, really. So, yep, lots of trips planned, starting with some trips next month, coming up in the next few weeks here. So
that's really cool. Now, we had you out at a Thankful Thursday. I found out that you were responsible for Bighorn Pack Llamas. Where did your love of llamas begin?
So it's a bit of a long story, but it really my llama journey, if you want to call it that, started back in 2017. I was working for an outfitter in central Idaho, doing trail rides and pack trips with a lot of horses and a couple mules, and pulled into a trailhead and saw a trailer that said Wilderness Ridge Trail Llamas on the side of it. And boy, I thought that was kind of funny. And so we went on that ride, and a couple of years later, I was laying in bed on my honeymoon in Mexico and watching hunting shows. And this guy comes on the show, and he's got llamas with him, and it says Wilderness Ridge. So I sent him a message, and sure enough, it was the same guy I'd seen at that trailhead. And we got to talking a little bit, and that kind of sparked the idea of llamas. And then when we moved out here just west of town, we got some property, and I was pretty dead set on having horses. I love horses. I always will. But started doing some more research into pack animals. And now that I was going to have to, you know, feel the full brunt of that cost rather than have the outfitter offset that, I started looking at some other options for pack stock, started looking at goats, looked at mules real briefly, and then started looking hard into llamas. And back in 2019, 2018, started really trying to get serious about trying to find some to purchase. And here we are today. So
how different is it to go on a pack trip with a llama rather than a horse?
So it's kind of funny. A lot of people who ride horses and pack with horses and hunt with horses and camp with horses do it for the horses. And I totally get that. But it's a lot less about the activity that you're going back there for sometimes, and a lot more about the horses. And that's just fine. You know, I love riding horses. Like I said, I always will. But llamas kind of change the game in that they're really supporting what other activity you're going out there to do. So whether it be camping, hiking, hunting, fishing, rock climbing, photography, all of those things still take the majority of the focus from the trip. And the llamas are just there to help support it. And you can make them as big or as small a part of the trip as you want. So that's a major difference. To access areas that sometimes you can't get with horses in terms of pack trips, mainly because you don't have to camp so close to water like you do with the horses. And they take quite a bit less time to take care of, you know, day-to-day chores, the feeding and the watering. So it gives you more time for your activities back there as well.
So the llamas kind of take care of themselves a little easier than a horse does?
Yeah, for the most part, you know, and a lot of times I'm packing water in with us, so we don't have to camp anywhere near water. I can pack in enough water for me and a couple other folks and the llamas themselves and not have to filter water back there at all. So that becomes pretty nice. But yeah, we use either stake out ropes or low lines to stake out the llamas. They get about a 20-foot circumference to graze out there. They'll eat just about anything that's good for them, including pine bark and pine needles. So kind of like a goat in that way. And yeah, they really don't require a whole lot of feed. So we move them maybe once or twice a day, depending on where we're at, and pack in about a pound per head of protein pellets just to help supplement them while they're in the backcountry and working hard. And that's about it. So we offer them water once a day. They'll drink maybe a gallon or two. Pops, and it's not uncommon for them to not drink the first, you know, day or two of a backcountry trip.
Really? So they can sustain off a minimal water and it sounds like minimal food.
Yeah, super, super efficient animals, you know, just from a biological perspective. They process their food really, really well. Their excrement comes out basically weed-free because of that. They process all the seeds. They get a lot of their moisture from their feed, especially if they're getting fresh green feed. Yeah, so they're super, super efficient in just about every way.
What about when it comes to the load that they can carry? You know, you got a big horse and they're able to carry a lot of weight.
Yeah, yep. Horses can certainly outpack them weight-wise, but llamas hold their own. They're looking at, you know, between 20 and 30% on the high end of their body weight for packing. So for most of the llamas we're using nowadays for pack llamas, you're talking about 70, 80 pounds if you're packing 5 days a week. If you're trying to get an elk over the ridge back to camp, you can throw 100 up to 120 pounds on the right llama.
Wow. How many llamas do you take on a pack trip? Is it just particular on how many people you got or?
Yeah. So yeah, that number always seems to be increasing as time goes on as well, just because I like having them back there with us. But it depends on what you're doing, where you're going and who you're going with really, but anywhere from two up to six. I was on a hunt with four other guys in September and we had, I think it was nine llamas back there with us, 9 or 10. So it all depends on where you're going, what you're doing and who you're with. But yeah, anywhere from 2 to 10, I guess.
So if you have nine llamas with you on a particular trip, how many horses could you take back with you in comparison with the food and water that you'd have to have?
So I would think that would be probably about 3 to 4 horses, and we're talking pack horses. And if you're carrying in feed, if you had to do a feed run, we were back there for about a week. So that becomes a little bit of a factor as well. That's one thing you don't have to do with the llamas is any kind of feed or water runs for the most part. So, yeah, so you're looking at about maybe two llamas per horse.
Well, that's just fascinating. Pete Mattson from Bighorn Pack Llamas. And, Pete, is it safe to say there aren't a whole lot of pack llamas in Wyoming?
You'd think so on the surface, but actually kind of Wyoming is almost the mecca of the pack llama industry in North America. There's some bigger operations, Northern Colorado out of Fort Collins, Lander Llama Company out of Lander, and then Wilderness Ridge Trail Llamas out of Idaho Falls. I think those are some of the bigger operations that are breeding and training and running pack trips as well. So yeah, Casper's kind of right in the middle of all of that. So we're in a good spot.
That's amazing. I'd never really thought about a llama being a resource like that.
Yeah, they're becoming a lot more popular. Every day I get calls about once a week of folks trying to look for llamas for sale. There's really not that many of them. And we're talking pack llamas specifically. There are other kinds of llamas that are not intentional pack llamas. So it's kind of like the square rectangle thing. Every llama is a llama, but not every llama is a pack llama.
God, yeah.
So there's only about a few thousand pack llamas in North America right now. And yeah, the popularity is certainly increasing.
How far will you or can you take your pack llamas if someone books a trip with you?
So we're restricted to our permitted areas, just based mostly on the U.S. Forest Service and BLM and where we can operate and where we're permitted. So right now we've got a permit for the southern portion of the Bighorn Mountains. It's like basically the entire Snowy and Sierra Madre ranges.
So it's not just hunting trips that you guys are able to be booked for. You do even smaller events and camping trips.
Yeah, so what we do, we don't do any overnight guided services. We're simply a pack service. Mm-hmm. So we will carry, we do what's called a drop camp or a spike camp, where we pack in our wall tent, our stoves, our chairs, our cots, our sleeping bags, our coolers, basically everything you'd need to have a nice time out in the wilderness and live a pretty cushy life while you're back there. And then we set it up for you and you hike in and enjoy it. And then when you're done, we come back in, we pack everything back up and we pack everything back out. So it's really kind of a turnkey camping trip back into the wilderness, into the wild. And then we also do pack services. So we'll pack your gear. If you don't want to use our gear, we'll pack your gear. And that's good for rock climbers, photographers, experienced backpackers, you know, who are trying to support a through hike or something like that. And then we also do game retrievals. So say you're back there in hunting camp and you shoot an elk 4 or 5 miles back from camp or from where you're parked, and you're not quite equipped to pack it out, or you simply don't want to, you just call, we'll go pick up your you know, legally taken and tagged animal and pack it out for you.
Wow, that is absolutely amazing. And you even have a little something for the kids, right? We let the kids come out and hang out.
Yeah. Yep. So we do llama walks and day hikes as well. We're doing those mostly up on Muddy Mountain, but closer to the Casper area. So we'll meet up, we'll do a llama walk and talk and really get to know llamas. It's fun for kids to come out and say hi, get some photos taken. And for other folks as well who just want to get introduced to llamas. One new service we're going to start offering here pretty soon is a packing clinic. We're not doing llama rentals right now. We just don't have the llama numbers for it.
Right.
It's going to be like a packing 101 course. Well, you'll learn the ins and outs of packing with llamas, and then it should be transferable to other outfitters who are renting out llamas. So that way you don't have to do the course the day of when you go pick up your llamas. We're going to try and partner with some other llama companies so that our course is good for wherever you're going to be renting llamas from. So it's kind of a double dip there.
Definitely a pretty cool opportunity for you to check this out. And it's right here in our backyard. Go to bighornpackllamas.com to find out more, find out how to book a packing trip, or if you need a little assistance, Pete can get you all hooked up. And I didn't know that I would be as interested in llamas, Pete, until that night at Thankful Thursday. And then I started researching. I'm like, well, this is really cool. And I'm sure a lot of people don't even know about this.
Yeah, yeah, they really are incredible animals. You know, they're really purpose-built for packing. They've been packing in South America for thousands and thousands of years. So, yeah, it's really cool to be able to get them out there and put them to use, and they sure make it fun.
Pete Madsen, again, we worked with him, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Also find them, bighornpackllamas.com. Pete, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Well, we are back here on Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. It's been a very fun, entertaining, exciting show. Lots of information thrown out. Of course, you can always go ask us any more questions at our station's app. Thank you again for tuning in. Now, coming up next weekend is a pretty cool event with the Wyoming chapter of the Dallas Safari Club. And Jamie Morales is with us from the club. And Jamie, how ready or prepared are you guys for next week's event? It's going to be pretty big. You ready?
We're getting there. Definitely getting there. I mean, there's so many last minute things to put together. And, you know, it's like a huge, crazy event. There's so much paperwork and stuff to, you know, deal with the outfitters and donation forms. And so we're getting there.
This event is next weekend, the 17th and 18th, and some of the items that you guys have for auction and to give away and have secured are really wild, crazy, and a big opportunity.
You know, being a part of the Dallas Safari Club, we're really fortunate to be able to have lots of connections with folks around the world, really. And so that's benefit, you know, for us. And definitely you can check out our auction online. So at our website, so it's wyodse.org, All of our live auction items are listed on there, but you can also check it out on online hunting auctions. So we're actually going to be doing our auction online as well. So if somebody can't make it to the event, but they still want to, you know, bid on an item, it's going to be an online event as well.
That's pretty cool. That's big time technology there.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's been crazy putting this all together, but it's great. We already have some people bidding on some different hunts and different items. And we have a couple of featured hunts. We have this really awesome hunt in Hungary. It's with a fallow deer. So it's for one hunter and one non-hunter, but you get to stay in a castle and, you know, you get to travel around Budapest. And it's a really, really cool trip. And so we kind of look at these hunts as kind of like a gateway, you know, to kind of access and start hunting and fishing around the world. And these auctions really give you an opportunity to be able to do that.
I was chatting with someone just the other day, and we were talking about the Dow Safari Club and how Wyoming has a chapter. The first thing they said was, well, how does that help us here in Wyoming? And really, it actually does. Can you give us a quick background of the Wyoming chapter of Dow Safari Club?
So 95% of the funds that we raise get to go to projects of our choosing. And really an astounding 75% of those funds we keep in our state. So, you know, the extra 20%, we have 5% that goes to that foundation. The other percentage, the Dow Safari Club gives us choices within education, conservation, or advocacy. And then we get to choose as a club where we want to put, you know, that extra 10%. So what's really great is, you know, we put our money towards projects that are right in our back door.
Can you tell us some of the projects that have actually benefited from the Dow Safari Club Wyoming chapter?
So a couple projects that have benefited because of the Wyoming Dow Safari Club is the Sisterhood of the Outdoors. We sponsored three women last year to, you know, go hunting in Wyoming. So we're supporting women, and these girls are coming from, you know, around different states in the United States. So from like one came from Ohio, one came from Texas. So, you know, they got to see Wyoming and all its beauty, and, you know, they got to take their first animal here. So we help support that. We've had events with our own kind of little section within the club called Women in the Field. So we got 50 women together. We had some little appetizers, and we went to Wyoming Gun Company, and all these ladies got to, you know, try their hand at all these different firearms, and it was all paid for by the club. And it's just a chance for, you know, the girls to kind of get together and, you know, learn some firearm safety and just camaraderie really with the girls. So that's been great. We've also done some things with the Wyoming Game and Fish Education Department. So we've bought clay pigeon throwers for the education department to get them the proper equipment that they need to do that.
Jamie, you and I have talked in the past where, you know, it's Wyoming and everybody's a hunter or a fisherman, but you'd be surprised the number of ladies that always thought, well, it's just my husband's thing. I don't have any way to be able to get out and do that. But a couple of the programs that you have assisted with are all about getting the women to be in the outdoors and love the outdoors as much as their husband does.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, not all women may love to hunt, but I know a lot of women who like to go out with their family just to be in the outdoors. A lot of them like to take pictures or, you know, just be outside and relax. All women are different. And, you know, we just want to try to get some women together who do like to hunt, or maybe, you know, they're a little bit nervous about hunting and they want to step and try something new. And so, you know, we're a great group of people to be able to, you know, come and talk to kind of get you started with that on your journey.
Even if you're not a hunter, you're not a big fan of the outdoors, but learning gun safety, if there are guns in your house, you should know how to use them and how to be safe with them. So obviously that's something that you guys really focus on as well. So if they're looking for a little something to, you know, get out of the house and learn a little more, joining up with you guys is a great way to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're looking to gain just more of a membership. And so, you know, future members, we're hoping that we can meet once a month. We want to have like member meetups and get togethers. You know, we're also really big on the conservation piece. And so we want to be, you know, Wyoming to be able to stay the same way that it is. And we want to be able to enjoy the outdoors. And so, you know, really, we want to start some boots on the ground projects and get people involved, you know, in helping in the conservation with, with, you know, the wild things that we all, you know, hold near and dear to our heart. So yeah, it's not just about, you know, the women. It's not just about the kids. It's like, it's the whole kit and caboodle. We want people just to come out, enjoy the outdoors and love it. We're about the conservation piece. We're about the education piece. And then we also, we advocate for, you know, hunting to stay alive.
If you go to yodsc.org, you can find out about how to become a member and find out more about this big event that's coming up next weekend. Where's this going to be held?
Yeah, so on the 17th, and if anybody's interested in our club, like you said, go to the website. On the 17th, we're kind of doing a membership drive, and it's going to be at the M building. So it's the new McGinley building. It's like the old Wells Fargo, that dome in town.
Uh-huh.
But you can get tickets online on our website for the gala. Come check us out. On the 17th, we're going to have some food. It's going to be some fun. You can buy some things. So, yeah, that's going to be at the M building. And then tickets for the gala are online. So it's super easy to check out.
Very good. Get over and see them again, yodcs.org. Jamie, thank you so much. And we look forward to hearing big things from the Wyoming chapter of Dallas FAR Club.
Yeah, we hope to see you guys out.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.